All right, so we are, first of all, wrapping up a couple of things from chapters 34, 35, and then we launch into the Assyrian invasion, which is going to involve a lot of history, a lot of psukim, and as you noted, Janine, a lot easier than the poetry. It's a different set of questions, really. But we had to first just finish up some elements from the imagery and language that's found in Perek Lamed Dalet, Perek Lamed Hey, chapters 34 and 35. So specifically, if you look in the Stone Tanakh on page 1000, look at the bottom of 1011, although we'll be flipping over onto 1013, but just remember what it was that we were talking about. This section of chapter 34 describes the devastation God is going to bring upon those who had devastated Israel. And there's a whole list of animals and birds and different creatures. Remember we talked at the end last time about the shade and the sa'ir and the lilit. But then, after listing all of the birds in 15, it says in sentence 16, Dirshu me'al sefer Hashem, seek from the book of God, ukra'u, and read it, achas mehena lo ne'adara, not one of these is missing, yishavru usa lo pakadu, no woman is missing her fellow, kifi Hashem tziva, because God has commanded. And it's not clear at all what he's talking about. What does that mean, nothing is missing? So the pshat, the simple read, I think, is with Ibn Ezra, Abarbanel, and Malbim. And I brought you Malbim on the sheet. He says what it's saying is that all the forces that God said he's going to bring against the Assyrians are actually there. It's sort of the flip side of the idea that you find in another pasuk in Yeshaya, actually, Ish lo ne'edar, that everybody will be redeemed in the end, and nobody will be missing, no one will be left behind. So here he's saying all of God's forces are there, not one of them are missing. As I translated in number one, it's the custom that military leaders record a book of the soldiers' names, and when they gather and wish to know if any have been lost, they read their names from the book and know who is missing. Right? That's what you do in the military. You call roll. So too, God, leader of this army, these beasts and birds who recorded the names of these soldiers in a book. So God has a record. Seek now from the book of Hashem, call each one by name and see that none of them are missing. It's a promise that every single thing I told you was going to happen, in this case to the enemies, is actually going to happen. Yeah.
Maybe I'm missing something. Why the animals? I mean, I sort of understood it as you'll find the animals in the original Torah. And maybe I'm,
No, that's Rashi.
Right, okay. So he's just saying we have the animals because they represent.
So what they're trying to do here is look at it in context, because Rashi and Radak take the view that you take, that when you describe Sefer Hashem, the book of God, by default, that's the Torah. So as far as Rashi is concerned, it's a statement of all the creatures that God said should be on the Teva, should be on the boats, were actually on the boats. They actually survived the flood. That's the way Rashi reads it, and that it's God who brings them to the boat, which, by the way, is a nice debate in Parshas Noach, because at one point it says Noach supposed to bring them to the boat, on the other end it says Noach, they came to Noach, suggesting that God brought them. This read of Rashi here would support that. Or you have Radak, who says that it's saying that all the creatures mentioned in the laws of Kashrus are all found in our world. All of them actually exist. Now, we may not know what they are, but that's the way they take it. But I think what's bothering Ibn Ezra, Abarbanel, and Malbim about those reads is, what would that have to do with anything? Why would it be here? It's just a random statement of divine greatness? So therefore they say, no, it's the book. Remember that Yeshaya is called upon multiple times to record his prophecies in a book. So the book of God is the book of the Nevuot, of the prophecies of God. And none of these things, none of these elements, and in particular, yes, the animals that symbolize the ruin of these nations, none of them is missing.
Except, and this might be very far-fetched, if you're talking about the destruction of the nation, then if you take Rashi's view, the destruction of the world, the
yes.
animals survive.
Right.
Right, so now I'm destroying the nations, but there's still... I destroyed the world, but the animals.
So there's one destruction, there's another destruction.
Yeah.
I hear you. I find it to be interesting I hear it. It makes Rashi a little bit more context-oriented. But fundamentally, I think that's really what you're seeing here, is the problem that you find in many cases in Tanakh, for Parshanim, for commentators, is do I explain a term based on what the term sounds like to me, or do I explain it based on the context? Sefer Hashem sounds like Torah, but it's hard, even with the devastation, like it's hard to really make that work. Or I say, no, Sefer Hashem is something that fits the context, the roll call for God's forces. I definitely hear your point, Rebecca, certainly because the animals here are more symptomatic of the destruction than they are the weapon that brings it about. So I certainly hear that. The second point that I wanted to show you here is in Perek Lamed Hei, chapter 35, sentence 9. More animals. In this case, though, it's about animals that aren't there. Right? First you had animals that were there, now we have animals that are not there. In Pasuk Tet, sentence 9, Hashem predicts, in general in chapter 35, as we noted last time, this is the restoration of the land of Israel. That which had been a ruin will now flower and bring forth produce. And we're told, Lo yesh shamariyeh, no more lions. Ufritz chayos bal ya'alena. They translate that as the poretz, the animal that would burst forth. The boldest of the animals are not going to go there. No more dangerous animals. And I found that really interesting because it harks back to chapter 11. Right? If you remember chapter 11, that was one of the most famous chapters in Yeshaya about the future messianic time. And there, Vagar Ze'ev in Kebeth, the lion lies down with the lamb, and the wolf with the, actually it's the wolf with the lamb, whatever, you know, no more dangerous serpents. But the image there was that the animals become tame. Right here, take a look back at it. We'll take a minute to do that. Page 972 at the bottom of the page, 973 at the bottom of the page. Right, starting with sentence 6. The wolf will live with the sheep, the leopard will lie down with the kid, a calf, a lion whelp, and a fatling will walk together, and a young child will lead them, the cow and the bear will graze. Right, you see that? The lion eats hay. So there was an image of the taming of the wild animals. Not the disappearance of the animals, but that they become safe. And we had that discussion there as to how to read that and how to understand it. Was it, you know, was it a mashal? It's a parable for our enemies. Is it meant to be a statement that there will be peace among human beings? Is it literal that no, the animals actually will become tame? We compared it to the Torah, where Hashem says, "Vishbaticha yara'a," I'm going to get rid of dangerous animals in the future. I think it's just interesting to see that in chapter 11, he says the animals are there; they're just no longer dangerous. Whereas here, he's saying there is no threat; the animals are not a threat at all. So I thought that was something worth exploring at some point. For now, I'm just bringing it up in order to note it. But probably something that's worth a share at some stage. Okay. Four sentences that are just of external interest. Chapter 34, sentence 10. Just because I know that people want to know about this, and I think Ora had made a comment about it last time. Chapter 34, sentence 10. So we're back on page 1011. This is a description of the ruin brought upon Assyria, or the enemies in general. We talked about it as Edom, whoever this is. So the pasuk says, night and day the fire will not be extinguished, the smoke will continue to emerge. Sorry, that wasn't the pasuk that I wanted. I wanted the next one, pasuk Yud Aleph, sorry, sentence 11. The second half specifically, after describing all the birds that are there, you see that? They have benata aleha kav tohu ve'avnei vohu. He will extend upon her kav tohu ve'avnei vohu. So I really like the Art Scroll translation. I think if I ever put together a band, I want to call it Plum Bobs of Void. I think that just has a ring. Plum Bobs of Void. What are you talking about? So, kav tohu v'avnei vohu. Kav.
Lines of chaos and weights of emptiness.
Lines of chaos and weights of emptiness. Kav, a line.
What they mean by plumb? I guess it's a plumb line.
Yes, yes. It's exactly what it is. It's the weight at the end of the plumb line. But Kav Tohu, they have here as a line of emptiness. They have a line of chaos in yours. The Avnei, the stone, doesn't mean a stone. It's the stone at the end of the line. It's the bob at the end of the plumb line. The weight that you use when you build things in order to make sure that everything is level. But they're stones of bohu, of void. So I'm just going to show you source number two without explaining it at all. Because I don't know how. The Gemara says, we have learned tohu is a green line which surrounds the entire world, from which darkness emerges. Because there's a pasuk in Tehillim that says that he, God, sets darkness, his concealment, around him. So there is concealment around God. So this line produces that concealment, that darkness. And bohu, these are wet rocks, sunken in the depths from which water emerges. As the verse says, our verse, he will extend over it a line of tohu and stones of bohu. So these are stones that produce moisture. I don't know what I'm talking about. If you want to not know even more, look at the Ramban in the beginning of Bereishis, because he has a nice discussion about all of this. The only thing I can tell you is that yarok here probably does not mean green. When you find the word yarok used in the Gemara, it frequently is somewhere along the color spectrum, anywhere between yellow and orange and green. They didn't do colors the way that we do colors. That's always the problem culturally, is how do you know that your word for a color is the same as somebody else's word for it? The colors that they refer to are often skewed from what we call a particular color. You see that when halacha deals with blood, and it talks about blood of different colors, and you see it talk about dam yarok. Like, what in the world is dam yarok? I mean, yes, Star Trek, but beyond Star Trek, where is there such a thing as dam yarok? The answer is because yarok doesn't mean green. Okay, so that was one that I thought was worth noting and then completely skating over. The second one that I wanted to notice is in the same pasuk, and that is now it's not the same pasuk, right? Because for some reason I was off there. But the word that I had wanted to highlight is the word chashmanim. It is on that. I'm sorry. It is on that. It's not in the pasuk. It's in the Abarbanel that I brought you on the sheet. Right. When it talks about how the land will be settled by all of these different creatures, so Abarbanel in his commentary says something which is relevant to a comment that I made way back when in chapter 25. In chapter 25, we had a line in chapter 25 in sentence 2. In which he talked about Armon Zarim, the palace of the foreigners, was the reference back in chapter 25, sentence 2. And there, Abarbanel, it was the week before Hanukkah, and Abarbanel made the point about how this refers to Rome and to the church, and the Apifiore, the Pope, with his Chashmanim. And I thought that was really interesting, because we talk about Chashmonim, Chashmonaim. Was there some kind of a link? What was that? And I didn't know what it was. And then I searched around and found that Abarbanel does it on this pasuk as well. He says in number 3, V'gam ze yochiach shehi romi. He says, this pasuk demonstrates that we're talking about Rome. Why? Because it mentions Chorim. And Chorim, he says, it's actually in Pasuk Yud Bet. It's not Pasuk, it's in sentence 12. It says, Choreha ve'en sham melucha. Chorim are leaders, people who are free people, people of standing in the community. They are the nobles. Kmo Chore Yehuda, a term we find elsewhere in Tanakh. And he says, who are these Chorim? Chashmanim v'hahegmonim asher bikir ba. The Chashmanim and Hegmonim. Hegmon is a term we usually use for a military leader, right? Like the word in English, right? H-E-G-E-M-O-N. Right? It's the same origin. And Chashmanim with their apifior, with their pope. So this time, I searched, and sure enough, it's actually a word in Tehillim. And I gave you the reference there, you can look it up later. Tehillim 6832, Chashmanim is it's a term for officers of some kind that Abarbanel is borrowing to refer to cardinals. It's not a play on the Hashmonaim. That's really why I wanted to note this. If you look at 35.5, page 1013, in the description of the future, you find, Az tipakachna einei ivrim, then the eyes of the blind will be opened, va'oznei chershim tipatachna, and the ears of those who had been unable to hear will also be opened, and it continues that those who had been lame will leap like the hart, the mute, their tongues will sing. It's a description of healing that happens in the future. So if you take a look at source number 4, you find the Gemara presents a challenge. That on the one hand, you have this pasuk saying people are going to be healed, but there's a pasuk in Yirmiyahu chapter 31 where it talks about there being people who are blind and lame, and they're part of that future world. So Reish Lakish challenges and says, what do you do with these two verses? And his answer is, they will rise, right? Tchiyat HaMeitim. They return from the dead with whatever flaw they had, and then they will, then they will be healed. And that's
Does anybody just not see it as, opening up their ears to the truth, to Torah, to...
Well, that's one. That takes care of the deaf. What do you do with the other ones? Okay, the blind also. That's fair. Yeah, if I only had deaf and blind, I would agree with you 100%, because that's an image we've seen in this in this section, in which Yeshaya was told Dafka that they won't hear and that they won't see, and now we're flipping it on its head. But the rest of it, I don't think fits. So this image is also found in Bereishis Rabbah in source number 5. I just thought it's worth noting the image that everybody is going to be healed from their physical flaws in the future. And then last, at the end of chapter 35, when everybody returns, they come to Tzion with joy, v'simchat olam al rosham, eternal joy on their heads. What in the world is that? So the Gemara in Shabbos says that it's joy that you wear on your head. Joy that you wear on your head. What is that? It's a crown. We're on page 1013. It's a reference to a crown. And the crowns that are going to be restored are the crowns from Har Sinai. If you remember, the Torah describes after the Egel, after the golden calf, when Hashem says, I'm going to decide what to do with them, it says, Vayitnatzlu b'nei Yisrael et edyam mehar chorev. The Jews removed the crowns that they had at Sinai. So evidently they had crowns. An edi is a crown. So the question is, well, what happened to those crowns? And what we're told here is, in the future, those crowns are restored to you. That is the joy that is upon your head, is the crown that you had at Har Sinai. That's the idea. So that's the Gemara in source number 6. Sorry?
I'm still confused as to when this...
This is a future... No, we actually did resolve that. No, we said this is the end of times. Yeah. Yeah, we went through the discussion about whether you can tie it into Chizkiyahu, and you can, because Chizkiyahu is supposed to be Mashiach, right? Something that we're going to come back to in the coming weeks. This is whatever, end of days type thing. We showed the apocalyptic language that was used in this section, and how that certainly seemed to feed it. The idea that it's a day of vengeance for God, and everything running with pitch and sulfur and... all those things that we just assume are kind of Armageddonish.
So we're not talking about the
meat, no. Correct. Unless Chizkiyahu turns out to be Mashiach, in which case it stops there. And then your question is, well, then why did you reference Edom? And we talked about that. Right, so all that's there. Yeah. Okay?
In the last paragraph, when he was writing something from the field, Lahem Gorali Edom, Lahem Bekat. So is that... people now, these are the nations are going to
be,
but he's been talking about the animals, and it suddenly seems to change.
Which one are you on?
Lamed Dalet, Pasuk
Yud Zayin. Oh, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Yeah, no, these are the people who God is actually, these are the people, these are the people who are getting the land.
Right.
Yeah.
But he just says Lahem. He's talked about animals and suddenly.
Oh, that's interesting. Unless you were to say that it's referring to the animals.
Well,
And if you take, no, but I hear how you could see. I hear that it could be read that way.
Tradition he's talking about.
Yeah, that is an interesting question. So I'm going to take a fast look. What I've started to do, I think I mentioned this, the last sentence in chapter 34. Oh, you know what? I didn't bring it. Nope, don't have it with me. Sorry. I was going to look it up. Who is it who's getting the lots? In chapter 34, sentence 17. So what I do at this point with these chapters is I just print out the text with all the mafarshim I want to look at and just have it in a booklet so I can then go through it that way. It's a lot easier. So I know you can do that on Ala Torah.
I have a whole bunch here.
So on Pasuk Yudayin, that would be the question. On Pasuk Yudayin, what do they say? Ala Torah has them all available. Or it's either Ala Torah or HaTanach, I forget which one. But,
It's talking about all the animals, and then suddenly he threw lots, and everyone's going to have live forever.
Yes.
All right. If I get a chance, I'll email it out later. I don't remember, and I could see reading it.
Rashi says
b'chayot.
Interesting. It's the animals.
I was thinking of the desolation.
Yeah,
he's assigning it to the animals.
Yeah, but if it's desolation, we don't believe that's going to be out of London.
Well, no, there it is. It's just in Israel that it's not. That's what he's suggesting. That, yeah. Interesting. All right, I'll look it up later and email it out because I don't remember. Okay, good.